Yeah, that's interesting. Anyway, yeah, I guess some of the South African guys have a huge amount of space. I think some of the Australians do anyway, but that is interesting. Anyway, I don't want to go down too much of a rabbit hole here. Back to you, BB2BXL.
Okay, very good. Gary, KA2UTF, were the answers reasonable? Do you have any response?
I mean, there's information in there, but I'm trying to get down to the molecular level of what's going on in the ionosphere, you know, helium and hydrogen and ionization and dense patches and the combining of various layers and the separating of other layers at different times of the day and the interaction with, you know, HF signals and the cause of flat fading, selective fading, and things like that. It's a very large topic, I guess.
WA2VFM, good evening.
Yes, WA2VFM.
Good evening, everybody, and Gary, good evening to you. I've been looking for you for some time. How have you been?
Okay, go ahead.
Regards from Jerry.
Thank you. I think we're on a directed net.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was listening out, but I was unaware of that. All right, Gary, you take it. I'll look for you another time. Good evening to everybody else.
Yes, Stu, this is AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. You've been here once before.
Oh, I think I've been there more than once, but... yeah, but thank you for the clarification. I like to listen, I like to learn, and occasionally I like to say hello.
Okay, very good. You're always welcome here, Stu. Getting back to Gary, I mean, you could probably take a PhD in the field. There's a lot of literature available. There's 100 years of history, and there are some deep weeds in different places. The D layer, the E layer, the F1, the F2. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, I think I did one of my little science talks on the history of the discovery of the different ionospheric layers. So it's a fascinating subject, but like I said, you can get a PhD in this field.
That's okay. I'll keep the one I got.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
Do you have time for a quick question?
Okay, as long as it's quick.
I was having a conversation with Alan, I don't know how many days ago. We were talking about the audio stage in a receiver and the distortion rating for the audio stage in a receiver, any receiver, expensive, cheap, and in the middle. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I mean, you could measure almost anything. Whether or not it effectively causes you any problem is questionable. You know, nowadays test equipment is so precise and wonderful that you could get into modulus distortion down to infinitesimal fractions. And, you know, if one device is twice as high as the other device, but your ability to perceive it is way above that, doesn't really make that much of a difference. So you kind of have to take a common sense, in my opinion at least, a common sense approach to what levels of distortion are going to affect your experience with the radio. If it's negligible, you know, one half of negligible to me is still negligible. So, you know, you got to take specifications with a small grain of salt.
Yes, sir. And if you see distortion ratings on stereophonic equipment, high fidelity, you're not going to turn the volume to 100%, you know? you're only going to turn it up 5 or 10%. At 5 or 10%, there's much less distortion than if you turn it up to 100.
Yes, and again, it really has to do with the eye of the beholder. There are people with great ears who can pick up things that I could never pick up, and then there are tone deaf people that you could give them completely awful audio, and they'll smile and love it. I mean, this was very, very noticeable with the onset of MP3 players, and when bit rates were very low and digital resolutions were very low, and it was a mess. Most people tended to like it. They didn't have any problem with it. So, it depends upon the individual. If you like loud music and your radio puts out too much distortion but you don't hear it, it's like the sound of a tree falling in the forest. If no one's there, is there a sound produced? Specifications are good eyeball things that you can compare and look. And I always look through Sherwood receiver specs to see where my radios are on the list. But push comes to shove, it's the experience that counts most. If you can't perceive the amount of distortion, then it's okay for you.
QSL. I guess that also was my big experiment for a while. Output audio, sound quality, speaker type, placement of speaker, the level of the volume and the RF gain and, whatever. Finally, I think I got it as good as it's going to get. But, in having conversations with a bunch of people about it and the quality, of the audio that you can get from your radio.
Yeah, well, it's different for each model, and people's perceptions are different as well. I regularly look at the specs of a lot of audio equipment, and they're very proud of their audio reproduction goes up to 22,000 hertz. I can't hear anything above 10,000 hertz, so it's all wasted money on my ears, unfortunately. But again, I understand the marketing, and young people can hear much higher than I can. So again, you gotta think of these things with a bit of common sense. I'm guided by measured specifications, but I try as best as I can to put them in the right frame of reference for my life of what specifications are more important to me and what are less. It's on an individual basis. You got to kind of find that sweet spot for yourself. Yes, Alan.
I got to turn that one down. Okay. I don't think you can hear all the things on our discussion. So, it doesn't sound different when it has all the tones in it that are beyond your range of hearing. It just sounds fuller. That's true for all of us. I'm wondering where KHUGF is located. Maybe we could do the ionosphere thing on Simplex and not take up the next time.
Okay, did you cut your power? Because your noise went all the way up.
And now I got a hump. I'm in a different location, that's all.
Oh, okay. So, Gary, Alan is curious of your location.
Fresh Meadows, Queens.
Oh, excellent. We have no problem. Name is Simplex frequency, Gary.
Come again?
Name a Simplex frequency.
I can't do that tonight. I'm keeping my XYL up as it is.
Okay, well, I'm in Bayside, so anytime you catch me from home, we can do this ionosphere thing. Go ahead, Roy.
Roger. By the way, Roy.
Gary, I think you said, by the way, and that was it?
Yeah, I had a cousin who was an audiophile, and he would spend $35,000 on a pair of speakers. And I definitely urged him to get a hearing test before he spent any more money.
Yeah, I know guys like that. Look, you know, sometimes it looks big and pretty, and, you know, if they can afford it, and if they don't ask you for a loan, then sometimes you just have to say, gee, that's a pretty speaker. What can you do?
Yeah, but my speakers are $19.95 each. The radio, not too expensive with an upgrade. How to say, I think in order to determine the quality of the audio, you use the same speakers and perhaps you have two or three different radios. Then let your ears be the judge.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, certainly.
There are those audiophiles who feel that fidelity of imaging means as accurate acoustic imaging as possible of the original. And there's another school who feels that artificial warmth or other qualities that are introduced into sound are preferable, whether or not they are entirely accurate in terms of their reproduction of the original.
Yeah, but either they're intelligible or they're fidelity. You can have one or the other, or you can have both.
Anyway, I understand that, Gary. I kind of like the English speaker sounds. I have a B&W, so they're a little bit on the warm side.
Well, I've got Altec Lansing Voice of the Theater with a separate tweeter sitting on top of them. I don't think you can top it.
I have vintage JBL Horizon speakers.
I had no intention of playing King of the Mountain. I just mentioning my particular speaker. Well, my generic version of a speaker. I didn't mention model numbers or anything else. So, you know, I don't want to really play mine is bigger than yours type of stuff.
I was just joshing you.
Compared to Clipstorm. Bigger isn't always better.
Yeah, well, please no one say that's what she said. Alan, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, how do those things compare to Clipstorm? I'm old school.
Gary, you got any opinions? Because I never really tested those types of speakers out.
Repeat the question, Alan.
Yeah, I say again, how do those compare to Clipstorm?
Not sure what you mean by Clipstorm.
There was a speaker manufacturer, but I guess they're not in business anymore.
Voice of the Theater has a 16-inch woofer, big horn, mid-range drivers, and you have to put your own separate tweeter box on top with a crossover network.
The sub-bass.
Connected net.
By the way, Clipshorns go back 70 years for anyone who likes history.
Well, I like the fact that you mentioned Sherwood.
What about JBL? How far back do they go?
I wouldn't think quite as far as something like Clip does.
Yeah, but doesn't Klipsch already exist today?
Yeah, I think the company still exists, but that particular model with the horns is a thing of the past.
Yeah, they had some... JBL had this two speakers and a round dome in front of it. I forget what it was called, but from the 60s, early 60s, trying to think of the name of it.
Now, by the way, JBL started in 1946, so Google is our friend.
How about Altec Lansing?
That went back to 1927.
There you go.
Well, guys, it's been loads of fun, but it is time for the SpaceNet report. I just want to thank everyone who participated tonight, and I hope the people that listened were informed and or entertained and or was amused. And I hope that you all remember to come back next Sunday when we try to do it all over again. So I'll be back in a little while, but until then, here's WS2N, Paul, with the SpaceNet report.
AC2GS, WS2N. Okay, Roy, and, you know, I read your science section, and there is one very, very good topic in there all about beta-carotene, how that's involved with macular degeneration and possibly, you know, not curing, but helping somebody not get lung cancer. So it's a pretty good read. I think it's what, vitamin A, beta-carotene, is that right, Roy? Apparently you're replacing that with something else. All I can envision is some pill coming out very shortly for people taking this on a regular basis. What did you think about that? Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS, let me see if I have it. Okay. Yeah, it was an interesting article. What basically it amounts to is macular degeneration. Ophthalmologists are giving food supplements. I remember Dick, K2RIW, was discussing this a few years ago. They seem to have found that in testing whether they can adjust the additives, they took out beta-carotene and replaced it with something else, found it to be more effective, apparently, statistically speaking. And there was also this weird increased incidence in the beta-carotene people for lung cancer. So the tendency is they're going to review the study and probably do some more, and they're probably going to formulate a slightly different set of food additives for delaying the onset of macular degeneration.
If true, that sounds like a good step in the right direction. So I found that very good. And there's a bunch of other topics. If anybody wants to read Roy's topics, he's got a half a dozen of them up there that are very good. All right, let me continue on. Yeah, okay. As far as the SpaceNet report, there's a couple of interesting things going on. One in particular is these EVA suits, spacesuits, that NASA's been using for decades on the on the shuttle. They've been having problems with them, so you know they're not going to last forever. They wind up with water sometimes inside the suit. Right now, officially, they're not going to use the suits for any EVAs until they figure out why they get accumulating water in the suit. They'll use it for an emergency type of repair. They will do that. But for instance, there's a few spacewalks they wanted to continue to do to upgrade the power system on the space station, and now they're going to delay that until they work things out. But in the future, you know, we're heading off to eventually to the moon, and the Gateway space station will eventually be built around the moon, in orbit around the moon, and they need different spacesuits, and NASA's been developing them, but they want to turn it over to private companies, and they'll actually be the buyer of them. So they did a contract now with two companies, Axiom Space and Collins Aerospace, to help develop spacesuits for not only spacewalks, but also for activity on the moon itself. So we'll see. There's one company, Collins Aerospace. Collins has been bought up a few times over the decades, back in the 1930s. Collins made ham radios, you know. Plenty of Collins radios are still out there working and operating. And in fact, every radio on every Mercury spacecraft and Gemini spacecraft, Apollo spacecraft, even Skylab were all Collins radios took us to the moon. They were on the Apollo spacecraft. So, early 70s, after Skylab, things started to change. But they had a great history, that's for sure. Let's see how they do things, because they need to get the first couple of suits ready by, the predicted date of 2025 going back to the moon. And we'll see. As time goes on, they'll be able to take those suits from either Axiom or Collins, and they could actually sell them to other private space companies. They could do with it whatever they like, and NASA will just be a customer. Any comments? Okay, nothing heard. There's been another flight, suborbital flight by Jeff Bezos of Blue Origin. Blue Origin is a company that they've already developed a suborbital rocket that takes off from West Texas and goes straight up. It gets past the Kármán line, which is 62 miles. It gets up to that elevation and then comes back down and separates from the booster, and it comes back on three parachutes and lands back in the desert. They have a soft landing, and right at the end they have little retro-firing rockets that ignite, so they come down at roughly 1 or 2 miles per hour. So it's pretty safe. They launched 6 people yesterday, and which is their fifth crewed mission, so it really doesn't make the mainstream news anymore. You know, I mean, yeah, in the beginning it did when Jeff Bezos himself went up on a first flight, and popular people like William Shatner, he went up. But now they're into regular flights. I mean, this one was delayed a few weeks ago. They were supposed to go up, but there was some problem with the rocket itself, so they had to delay it a little bit. But I mean, this is starting to happen on a regular basis, and I'm anxious to see this guy get his big rocket eventually off the ground, which is being developed in Florida. He built a massive building down there. He's building something called the New Glenn spacecraft. The one that does suborbital flights is New Shepard. New Glenn is going to do orbital flights, and eventually that will someday take astronauts into orbit as well. We'll see when that happens. That's a large rocket. I mean, it's almost as big as the Saturn V rocket. It's not as powerful. Saturn V ran on kerosene, and this thing runs on methane. So per gallon, you're going to get a lot more energy out of the kerosene. But it's still a very large rocket. And also going to be reusable. So we'll see how they do. Right now he's into charging money. People are paying who knows how many dollars. They don't even release that information to do these suborbital flights. But my guess is a couple hundred thousand dollars at least. Any comments? This is WS. Okay, I left it open for Echo Link. But nothing heard. Recently there was a launch by SpaceX, one of the many. I think he's launched around 24 or more rockets this year, and we're not even halfway through the year. But one of them was a couple weeks ago, was they call it a Transporter 5. It's a launch that you'll put 50 or 60 or 70 satellites sometimes on this thing. from different companies, different countries, and naturally you get paid for all of this. And some of them are very small. Some of them are CubeSats. You know, roughly four inch cube boxes going up, and now they make even smaller ones, half that size. And one of the things that they put on here was called it was built by a company that makes it. It's called Vigo Ride. Vigo Ride is a ride sharing platform. So this company wants to put small satellites on it, and then it will eventually, the whole platform will be launched with SpaceX, and then separate. SpaceX will do their thing and release the other satellites, but this one will have thrusters on board and will be able to go to a higher or lower orbit, so maybe even change in inclination a little bit. So this was a first shot for them, and their thing is the thrusters. They call them green thrusters because, there's no pollution or anything, and no possible carcinogenics involved, like some of the ones that they have today. These thrusters operate with water, and they have microwave system, 2.5 gigahertz regular microwave that blasts this water. I'm assuming they're keeping it warm. They must have heaters in this thing. But anyway, the water winds up getting shot out of these nozzles, and that's how it's maneuvering in space. So it's something new. They've had a problem with this Vigoride machine, not because of the thrusters, but apparently a frequency communication problem. So, by the way, the company that makes this is called Momentus. So they've been at it for a while, and they finally got a ride in space to test this thing. But they will probably work out the problems, and they're going to see what happens. Right now, their frequency is off. They're transmitting. They get an okay from the FCC to transmit up a certain frequency and down a certain frequency, and they're apparently off. I'd written the frequencies down somewhere, but anyway, it's in the gigahertz range. And so for some reason, we weren't communicating with the satellite. Now they actually have to go to the FCC to approve a new frequency just on a temporary basis so they could communicate with their transporter gadget that Momentus has built and try to recover it and bring it back to operation. Then they'll test out their thrusters again, and they'll release. They have nine satellites mounted on this spacecraft, and they'll release them, and they'll call it a success. But these are the things that are going on now. I remember when I was younger, just to get a satellite in space was front page news. No more. Any comments or questions? Okay, anyway, this is WS2M for the SpaceNet Report. Here's another topic. We have quite a few satellites orbiting Mars. NASA has quite a few. Japan has one. China has one. And even the United Arab Emirates has a satellite going around. The country India has their satellite called MOM, M-O-M. All these functioning satellites around orbit, orbiting Mars. And one of the ones that NASA has is called MAVEN, Mars Atmospheric and Volatile Evolution. And it went up, it was 2012 or 2013, so it's been in orbit ever since. And the idea of MAVEN is it sweeps down very low to the atmosphere. It's a pretty highly elliptical flight, closer, then it'll fly far further away. And every time it dives close to the atmosphere, it detects all the losses, or you know what's going on in the atmosphere. You know how much hydrogen is being lost, how much methane, how much oxygen is there. And the idea of the mission was to figure out what went wrong with Mars, with the atmosphere, and how long it's taken. What's the future of the Mars atmosphere? So that's what MAVEN does. They also use it as a relay. So it's, you know, one of the, let's call it repeaters in the sky over Mars, that any vehicle on the surface uses it to communicate with Earth. For instance, you have now Curiosity and Perseverance riding around on Mars. You have the InSight mission that's in one prominent location, also on Mars. So they'll transmit signals up, you know, to these orbiting spacecraft on 440, you know, 70 centimeter band. And they in turn on these vehicles, spacecraft, such as MAVEN, also Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, there's another one, Mars Express by European Space Agency that's going around it. NASA also uses as a relay, and they transmit back, you know, on the X-band to the Deep Space Network on Earth. And for a while there, in February, MAVEN had a problem with communication, and apparently, I haven't read much about it yet, but apparently JPL has worked out the problem. Sounds like, you know, what I did read is that they always have backup computers, and they tried a few things and eventually went to the backup computer, and that brought the spacecraft back to normal operation. So one thing to have these spacecraft going around different planets, but also being able to service them from Earth, and that's essentially what they did. Any comments, questions? WS1. Okay. We also try to cover the foreign countries that launch vehicles in space, including China. And 2 days ago, they launched from the Gobi Desert another crew of three to their space station. They now have a space station in orbit around the Earth, similar to the International Space Station. The modules are about the same size, a little smaller, but right now they have one module, and I think it's around 55 feet long and 14 feet in diameter. And presently they have a cargo vehicle attached to it that docked with it 2 weeks ago autonomously. There was no crew on board. The last crew had returned. So the space station actually is temporarily abandoned. But anyway, this new crew that launched successfully docked with the space station. They go inside, and they will be spending about 6 months there. One lady, and she's been up before, and one of the, I think the commander has also been up. So this is what's going on. During their 6 months up there, they will receive two more modules as big as the one that they're in, you know, over 50 feet long. 14 feet in diameter. One will be launched, I think, in July, and another one in October. And that'll temporarily complete the space station. You know, they'll have plenty of room up there for three people. But they have plans in the future, in case there's interest from other countries, to expanding their space station. So, meanwhile, they keep talking about eventually closing down our space station in 2030, and that would be a heck of a thing if they did. hopefully these other companies, Sierra Nevada and also Blue Origin, plan on building their own space stations. And we'll see. Another one, Axiom, they were actually have hardware being built right now. Probably send their first piece up within a year to dock with the International Space Station, and eventually they'll send up a couple more modules, also another power module, they call it, big solar panels. And at the end of the life of the International Space Station, which is supposed to be 2030, hopefully beyond that, but at some point, when they decide to deorbit the ISS, Axiom will be new, and Axiom will separate all their modules at one time and become free flying. So we'll see how, what happens. Low Earth orbit is not a lost cause. Even so, that, you know, we don't have a plan. The United States NASA space station for Earth orbit. We have companies that are hopefully going to take up the slack and put them into space as well. What NASA does have plans on is actually building another space station, but not around Earth. They plan on putting it around the moon called Gateway, so that'll be great. With the crews on there on a regular basis, there'll be greeting other crews that will be flying to the moon, flying to the Gateway space station at some point, docking with them, spending some time there, and eventually taking another spacecraft down to the surface. So that's pretty interesting. So NASA's, you know, they say, well, that's not building another space station. Well, yeah, not around Earth, but they plan on putting one around the moon called Gateway. Let me stand by, see if there's any comments, questions. WS2N. I mentioned Sierra Nevada before. They are planning on completing the Dream Chaser spacecraft this year. And I don't think they'll be able to fly at the end of this year, although they talk about putting it into orbit before the year out, but I think it's probably going to be early next year. And their plan is to fly on top of the new Vulcan rocket that NASA is paying for. Boeing and Lockheed are building the Vulcan rocket. And Dream Chaser will be put inside the top, inside the fairing. And because the fairing is, I mean, the fairing is big, but still not big enough. Dream Chaser's back wings will actually hinge and fold. So after attaining orbit, the wings will open up, and it'll fly to the International Space Station. Now, in the beginning, the first couple of years, the design is just as a cargo vehicle, no people. Yeah, you can go inside. You can go inside once you dock with the space station, but people will not be flying on it. So one of the things that they added to Dream Chaser, behind it, something called the Shooting Star, which is going to be essentially a cargo carrier. They'll be able to put like maybe 10,000 pounds, 12,000 pounds inside this thing. Plus, Dream Chaser itself will be able to carry, you know, maybe 5,000 or 6,000 pounds inside that as well. So, you know, you're going to be able to bring up large loads of stuff to the space station with Sierra Nevada's Dream Chaser. The and Shooting Star. Now, Shooting Star, once they undock from the space station, the two of them, the space plane, which will, you know, Dream Chaser will land on the ground. In the beginning, it'll land in Florida, on the same runway that all the shuttles used to land on. the shooting star part of it, the cargo, that second cargo carrier, will burn up in the atmosphere. They don't need that. That doesn't come back. So they developed and built the first one. It's really complete and ready to fly. What they call the shooting star. But they needed somebody that is more or less into mass production, because they're going to have to build many of these shooting star things. The Dream Chaser is not so many, because that's going to be reusable. Land, they'll put it on top of another Vulcan rocket and shoot it back up again, over and over again. But the shooting star portion, they needed somebody else, so they got involved with a company called Spirit Aero Systems that has the experience of building mainframe type of airplane parts and things like that. So they're more tooled up to quickly and less expensively build the shooting star cargo section that, for the Dream Chaser. So they let that contract out. So that's good. We'll look forward to a lot of new events in the not too distant future. Any questions or comments? And we haven't heard much from Elon Musk lately with his Starship program. I read a lot of work that's going on in Boca Chica, Texas, where his star base is located, and now also in Florida. But the articles I read, looks like they're getting somewhere, but I think they're far behind. They have a lot of problems with regulation. Everything from fish and wildlife things that they have to straighten out before they can launch, to complaints of neighbors. He's got all kinds of problems down in Texas. Whether he could iron them out or not and eventually start testing his Starship, who knows? He's supposed to have the Starship ready by 2025, to the point where you're going to be able to send a Starship to the moon, to dock with a Gateway space station. Let's say 2026, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Dock with the Gateway space station and just leave it there until a crew arrives. The crew will go to Gateway and then into his Starship, this big Starship thing, which is like 200 feet tall, is going to land on the moon with a soft landing. Crew will get out. From the top of it, you're going to need, looks like you're going to need some kind of cables or an elevator to just get down to the surface. When they're done with their mission, they're going to come all the way back up to the top of the spacecraft. There won't be a base there waiting for them. And then take off and redock with the space station again. Now, not only has a crew flown in Starship yet, this thing has it. The only flights it's made was suborbital flights, went up 6 miles or something, didn't even get to space, and I think they have one successful landing back on Earth, back in Boca Chica. But he's supposed to have this thing ready to the point where he can go to the moon. He hasn't even done an orbit yet with it. Not one orbit. In fact, his first orbit, he's been trying to get off the ground for the last year and a half. Would leave Texas, and it would fly almost around the whole Earth. It's going to get to around Hawaii, deorbit, and actually crash land in the ocean near Hawaii. And that's only the first one. Then he's got to do other ones and improve on it. And get to the point where you can put cargo and satellites in this. And after after a lot of flights, because to put a crew in Starship with no parachute system, they're gonna go into orbit and then they're gonna start the deorbit. They're going to be coming down with a propulsive landing on Earth with a crew inside. And then when they come down, they're not going to land. You know, their goal is to safely get back on Earth. They're going to fly right next to where they took off from. These big arms are going to come reaching out, grab Starship, and then eventually, you know, settle it down. And a crew is supposed to be in this thing. And he's supposed to get this all ready by 2026. I say it's not going to happen, but, you know, I wish him luck. Any comments or questions? WS2N. We'll see what happens with Elon. It's always a fascinating stories, things that come out. I mean, this guy, he doesn't experiment like NASA or Jeff Bezos. You know, they experiment, they test. The idea is not to break anything when they fly. He couldn't care less. He launches these things. Oh, if it blows up, why it blew up, and we'll fix it, you know. It's a different way of doing things. Any comments or questions? Because if not, we're going to turn it back to Roy. This is WS2N.
Oh, who's on 2KW with a comment?
Oh, okay. And 2KW, is that it? Very good. Over to you. Name here, by the way, is Paul.
Hi, Paul. This is Alan in Bayside. And thank you. Very comprehensive report. Just one suggestion. You know, space report, I would like to hear what's going on the sun, you know, protons, whatever. And if there's a meteor storm coming up, I'd like to hear about that, too. That's probably more effect on radio than lunar orbiters. Although the lunar orbiters are interesting, but, you know, I'd like to hear all the space news in one-stop shopping. Over.
Okay, I agree, Alan. Yeah, we used to do a lot of that here. I know Dick was great with that. He loved all those topics, too. And we, you know, he would really get into, media scatter and the next media shower, you know, so, you know, people that were interested in media scatter could go out and do that, you know. He was great. He got involved with the topics of the black holes and what happens when you get near a black hole, and he would tear us apart.
That time,
he's
complete. Like
these, interesting. We'll look for those topics. I see them, but yeah. And if you see anything, you know, that would be good if you could bring it up as well. There's a lot of stories about, you know, looking for a missing planet, Planet X. We used to do a lot of those topics. And then for a long period of time, Craig, what was his call letter? Craig always had the astronomy net. That was a different night. That was during a week. I mean, he would tell you everything you ever wanted to know about a telescope, Craig. That was terrific. Hey, thanks for the comment, Alan. We'll look for more topics like that. Ionosphere, the program out in Alaska, you know, looking at the ionosphere. Satellites that are presently doing it now. Got the Icon satellite in low Earth orbit that was looking at a sphere. another one called the Gold Satellite, and that's an ellipsis orbit, and that's always looking at the ionosphere. The two of them work together, and I don't see the results being published on those satellites. And we covered that quite a bit when they were launched. Any other comments or questions? Okay, we'll be here next week. Roy, I'm going to turn it back to you. Anybody that's listening, tomorrow night is Monday night, so that's when we have the Club InfoNet on these repeaters at 8:30. And that's always followed by George with the Clopper Chop. And, of course, Newsline always follows that. Roy, AC2GS, WS2S.
AC2GS, thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do on the technical net, and thank you for all that you do with the club. And I want to thank everyone out there. I think, I know I had fun. I hope you people did as well, and you learned a few things, and something hopefully piqued your interest, and you'll go and Google them and reference them and find out more about them. And if you find out something interesting, come back and share it with the rest of us. So thanks to everyone who participated tonight, and I hope you all come back next Sunday when we'll do this all over again. I want to remind people of links. If you want to reach me via email or either mailbag questions or topics for discussions or to share a puzzle or for me to ask Paul to look up something, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. As well, you can email Paul directly at spacenetreport@gmail.com. There's a link page with all kinds of interesting articles. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we keep it up for months and months and months. So a lot of interesting articles. One of them is a visual effect that, if you like those types of things. Then always keep in mind that I stream W2VL. That's available at technet.ac2gs.com. And my KC2NJI has this great amateurradio.tv site where he does archives of our technical net going as far back as September 2006. So keep that all in mind. And as Dick always would end the technical net, be kind to each other. Be safe, be smart, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and this is supposed to be fun, guys and gals, so if you're not having fun, you're doing it terribly wrong. Just a little bit of a line that I read last week, and I'll repeat this week. It's a quote from Epictetus. It was a Stoic philosopher about 2,000 years ago. The line is, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep that in mind, and I hereby formally close this lovely edition of the Limark Technical Net, and I, AC2GS, am clear. Until next week.
W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Yesterday, the weather was beautiful.
Oh, yes, it was. And then Lou is my second stop.
Ah, we're out in Selden?
Yeah, I want to see if I can get everything done with him today, up to where we are now.
Okay. Will any of, well, you're not sure if any of this will solve the dropout problem that we have, or it will.
No, I have no idea what's going on with that. That's got me somewhat perplexed.
Yeah, it's definitely intermittent. I just wonder whether it's, you know, again, some interaction of Echo Link IRLP or something like that.
Yes, the problem is I don't know if I've heard the dropout problem. I've heard the no audio problem.
Okay, I may be calling it a dropout when, you know, because that's as it was described, you know, that it suddenly dropped out, but actually it was the audio that dropped out and then came back.
No, actually, I think there are two different problems from what's been described to me. One, the audio problem I've actually heard. But, you know, what happens is it, the carrier's still there and it keeps the transmitter on while somebody's talking and their audio's not getting through. The other one is just the carrier disappears and after the hang time expires, it goes away.
Okay. And it seems to be one way again. But, yeah, I guess that's where you're not sure if it's on the receive end in Sheldon or the transmit end on